a panorama of English countryside. Hills, neat compact fields, trees, and a village. Good night, Mr. Tom. John Thor, Nick Robinson, Annabel Apsian, John Cater, Geoffrey Hutchings, Charles Kay, Mossy Smith, William Armstrong. Based on the novel by Michelle Magorian. Screenplay by Brian Finch. Produced by Chris Burt. Directed by Jack Gold. To the sound of bells, the villagers of Weirwold make their way from their homes to the church. From his front door steps a mature man with white hair and beard, wearing a suit, waistcoat, shirt and tie, and a soft cap on his head. He strides through the open gateway into the nearby churchyard. Avoiding the gravel path, the white-haired man walks across the graveyard, which is dotted with headstones, and a few trees, including a couple of copper beeches. Up ahead of him, a couple with three young boys enter the church. The white-haired man, now holding his cap, enters and takes a seat at the back, while at the front of the church, a vicar in a cassock tweaks a wireless set.
Seeds? Wait until the...
Sorry about that.
The church fills rapidly.
This is London. You will now hear a statement by the Prime Minister.
I am speaking to you from the Cabinet Room at 10 Downing Street. This morning, the British ambassador in Berlin handed the German government a final note stating that unless we heard from them by 11 o'clock, that they were prepared at once to withdraw their troops from Poland, a state of war would exist between us. I have to tell you now that no such undertaking has been received, and that consequently this country is at war with Germany.
A young RAF officer squeezes the hand of the woman next to him. The white-haired man stares at the brass eagle on the pulpit.
Give him an inch, take
the yard. Outside, he brushes past the women talking to the vicar.
Mr. Oakley...
The white-haired man turns.
I thought I spotted you sitting at the back there. Only, you've heard that our choir master, Walter Wingate, has just been called up.
No.
Which, as you can imagine, does rather present us with a bit of a problem.
Oh.
Only I have it on good authority that you're something of a musician yourself.
Well, I used to play the organ a bit, if that's what you mean. Doesn't mean I know anything about choirs, or would want to.
We all have to do our bit, you know. It's your duty.
When I need you to tell me what my duty is, Mrs. Ford, I'll let you know.
At least tell me you'll think about it, Mr. Oakley.
I'll think about it.
The women at the church door watch and whisper as Oakley saunters over to a gravestone and stands erect in front of it. Ignoring the other women, the youngest of them, Alice Fletcher, watches him. A steam train powers through the countryside. Some young children sit on board one of the carriages. A young boy in a cap wears a glum expression. A young girl clutches a teddy bear. A soldier in uniform passes down the aisle. Another young boy, William Beach, looks out of the window at the rolling countryside. Accompanied by a black and white collie, Oakley heads for the workshed behind his house. He hears the train. The steam train pulls into the station. The guard in uniform opens his door and steps down from the train. A couple of soldiers carrying packs march away from the station as Mrs. Ford, the woman Oakley barked at, trots towards the platform clutching sheets of paper in her gloved hand. She looks down the platform. As the train pulls away, she stares at the group of half a dozen children standing on the platform. They gaze at her. Oakley assembles a chair outside his workshed. He looks up and spots Mrs. Ford leading some of the children through the village. The children stop. Mrs. Ford knocks on someone's door. Mrs. Ford ushers one of the children towards the woman who answered the door. Outside his workshed, Oakley returns his attention to the chair, which is taking shape nicely on the workbench. As he opens out a tool, Mrs. Ford hesitates nearby and the pair glance at each other uneasily. Mrs. Ford leads three of the children, including William, past Oakley's house. Oakley washes his face at the sink. A scowl on his face, he dries his hands and face. Oakley opens his front door. Mrs. Ford stands outside with a thin-faced boy who holds a carrier bag. Oakley glares.
Well?
You realise I am the billeting officer for this area.
What's that to do with me?
His name is William Beach, and his mother says she'll only let him be evacuated if he's put with someone who's either religious or lives near a church. And the Home Office says it is obligatory to take one. So I'm sorry, Mr. Oakley, but he just has to go somewhere.
The sour-faced Mrs. Ford marches briskly away. Oakley turns to face the forlorn figure of William Beach in his knee-length raincoat with his carrier bag and gas mask box.
You'd best come in, then.
William takes half a pace forward, then stops and watches Mrs. Ford scurrying off.
Come on!
Oakley steps inside. The boy slowly and almost reluctantly follows him in and shuts the door behind him. A fire burns in the grate as Oakley stands, hands in his pockets, and faces the boy.
I'll take you, Michael.
William removes his gas mask box, lays down the carrier bag, then slowly takes off his coat. Oakley holds out his hand, and the boy gives him the coat. Oakley watches as the boy slips the gas mask box back over his shoulder, picks up the carrier bag and stands still. Oakley takes the coat to a row of hooks, pauses, then hangs it up. William cuts into a sausage on a plate by the remains of an egg and a slice of bread. A mug is beside the plate. William places a piece of sausage in his mouth and starts chewing. Sitting opposite the boy, Oakley watches as the knife and fork are left resting on the plate.
Look, if you've had enough, leave it.
William pushes the plate away slightly. He watches Oakley sip from his mug and imitates him. Oakley stares at William, who slurps his tea. William puts down his mug.
So, where are you from?
London.
Oakley, whose hands are clasped in front of him, grabs the arms of his chair and rises. He takes his and William's mugs away, as well as the boy's plate. Hearing the noise of the chair, Oakley turns to see the boy standing up by the table. Oakley sets the plate and mugs down in the kitchen, then walks back into the sitting room.
Look, I have to go out. Be all right for a bit on your own, will you?
Yeah.
Right. Have a look outside if you want.
William watches Oakley go. The boy's face is sullen and unsmiling. His shoulders hunch as the door shuts. William, in shorts, calf-length socks, shoes, sweater, shirt and tie, stands at attention, then slowly spins round to take in the surroundings of the house. He walks into an alcove under the stairs where there are shelves and a cupboard. William leans back to look into another room. He saunters through to it. To the left of a window is a harmonium. William goes up to it and tries to raise its lid. It's locked. He looks at the shelves above the instrument. Then his gaze falls on a photograph on top of the harmonium. It's a sepia image of a woman and a boy. Hearing the church bell, he moves across to the window. William parts the net curtains to see a view of the churchyard. Oakley marches with a determined stride as a man passes him on a bicycle. They're both heading for the parish hall, which has sandbags built up in front of it. William walks to the churchyard gate. He looks across at a stone angel amongst the gravestones.
I'm not having him, and that's that. What do I know about kids of that age?
Excuse me, Mr. Oakley. You have got him, whether you like it or not. And if you don't, well, you're just going to have to lump it, aren't you? For what it's worth, I wasn't happy about leaving the child with you either. But I'm afraid it's a case of needs must, Mr. Oakley. There's not another spare bedroom going in the entire village.
Then try another village.
That is out of the question. Look, we all have to put our shoulders to the wheel, Mr. Oakley. Even you. There is a war on, you know.
Outside the hall...
Mr. Oakley, about the choir cut.
Yes, I've said I'll try and be there.
Oakley strides away from the vicar, who glares at him. William stands in front of the stone angel.
Hello. You're one of the London lot, aren't you?
Yes, miss.
And a regular wild bunch, too, I've heard.
What's your name, then?
William Beach.
Well, William Beach, I expect I'll be seeing you in my class shortly. And it's not Miss, it's Mrs. Mrs. Hartridge, all right?
So who are you billeted with, then?
He lives there.
Oh, you mean Tom. Well, goodbye, William.
Hartridge is the RAF officer, his wife the woman who sat beside him in church. William flinches at the collie, which bounces in front of him. He picks up a spade.
Get away! Get away or I'll kill you!
No talk about killing, all right? Because I reckon we've got about enough of that already.
Tom Oakley grabs the spade from William. Inside the house, he pokes the fire.
Now, as far as the dog's concerned, it's my dog there. His name's Sammy. And he's soft as me pocket, really.
William's eyes are on the red-hot poker.
So don't you go taking no more sticks to him. Do you hear?
Tom brandishes the poker.
Well, now what?
William's eyes stare at the red-hot sizzling tip of the poker in front of him. He keels over in a faint. Tom rushes to him and lifts up William's head. Tom glances across at the poker, now lying in the fireplace. He turns back to the boy.
Oh, surely he never thought.
Flames flicker in the fire. Still in his clothes, William sits in an armchair, a quilt over his legs and lower torso. He's asleep. Tom empties the contents of William's carrier bag. He finds some underclothes and a Bible. Tom takes out an envelope. He reads the handwritten, "To whom it may concern."
Dear sir or madam, I asked if Willie could go and stay with God-fearing people, so I hope he has. Like most boys, he's full of sin, but he has promised to be good. But just in case, I'll put the belt in.
Tom's brow furrows as he reads. He reaches in the bag and removes a thick leather belt. William wakes, and as he comes to, Tom turns, the belt in his hands. William stares at the white-bearded man across the room. Tom glances down at the belt. Tom thrusts the belt back in the bag. William closes his eyes again. Tom walks into a bedroom carrying a pole with blackout curtains hanging from it. William follows him into the room and takes a look around. The bedroom has white walls with dark oak beams. Tom finishes fitting the blackout curtains, then turns round to face the boy.
Good night, then.
Good night, mister.
William walks to the side of the bed and sets his pyjamas down on the quilt. Tom stands across the bed from him.
You can call me Tom.
William nods his head. Tom does the same. Tom's shadow looms large as he walks out of the bedroom. The light from the landing illuminates the room. Downstairs, lit by a lamp on top of the harmonium, Tom walks over to the instrument and picks up the framed sepia photograph. He sits, staring at it.
Good night, Mr. Tom.
He looks up. In his bedroom, William lies in bed in his pyjamas. Tom returns his attention to the photograph of the woman and the boy. Day. Tom is in his garden working with a spade on a vegetable plot. Sammy the dog lies on the grass nearby. Tom glances up and sees William's face peering down at him from the upstairs bedroom window. William ducks away when he catches Tom's gaze. Upstairs he stands at attention in his pyjamas as Tom enters the room and sees a wet patch on the bed.
Sorry, mister.
Get them wet things off.
William pulls down his pyjama trousers as Tom starts to strip the sheets off the bed. William holds out the soggy pyjama bottoms. Tom takes them.
And the jacket.
Tom also takes the jacket. He strolls out, carrying the soiled garments and sheets, not seeing William's back, which is covered in welts.
Now, here's the post office. If you'll just get a stamp and post this for me, well, I'll have a quick word with the doctor.
Tom gives William some coins, then sets off across the road towards the doctor's. Tom looks back over his shoulder as William enters the post office, where a young boy writes a postcard in extremely small handwriting, using a pencil and magnifying glass.
Your mum won't be able to read that.
Yes, she will. She's got one of these too. And this way, you see, you get twice as much room.
Thank you.
The boy winks at William. Tom's with the doctor.
You see, when I got him up this morning, I found he'd wet the bed.
Not uncommon occurrence, Tom. The child who's been ripped out of his home practically by the roots and dumped in some alien place.
But what am I supposed to do about it?
What we're all having to do these days, Tom.
Huh?
The best we can under the circumstances.
So, what's your name?
William.
William Beach.
What's yours?
Zacharias Wrench. My parents' idea of a joke, I think. But you can call me Zach. Who've they put you with?
Mr. Tom.
I'm here with the doctor and his wife. Friends of my mum and dad's. You'll come in handy, I suppose. If I'm never ill.
Tom walks out of the doctor's.
All right.
Yeah.
Come on, then.
See you around.
Yeah, bye.
Zach, in a striped sweater and red cord shorts, leans on his red bicycle and waves at William, who runs after Tom. Two boys cover the roof of a tin hut.
Good lads.
The boy's mother, Alice Fletcher, spots Tom up a ladder.
Have you got your Anderson up yet?
It's been delivered.
I'll send the lads round if you like to give you a hand.
I can manage, thanks.
Who said you couldn't?
The woman wearing hairpins smiles at Tom as she takes washing from a line.
You still a member of that knitting circle round at the church?
Of course.
Only, you'll have heard I've been landed with one of these evacuees.
Talk of the village.
What about? Only, the only clothes he's got are what he's standing up in, you see.
You haven't got to clothe them, you know.
Oh, he wasn't planning to. It's just that I was wondering if between you, you could, like, rustle him up a couple of things.
I'll think about it.
Tom up a ladder working on a roof grins, as does Alice Fletcher. Morning. A milk churn is laid down by the two others outside Tom's house. The Fletcher boys bring a pile of clothes to him.
What's all this?
My mam sent them for young William. Well, there's no way I, George, can get into them anymore.
Right, thanks.
See you later, Mr. Oakley.
Will ya?
Give you a hand with the Anderson.
Ah, there.
Tom plonks the clothes down on William's bed.
For me?
Well, who else? Well, come on, let's see if they fit.
Tom's still in bed. He gets out and Tom looks under the quilt.
Never mind.
William removes his pyjama top. Tom stands in front of him holding a shirt open in his hands. William doesn't move.
Come on, then.
William hangs his head and turns round to slip his arms into the shirt. Tom sees the boy's back. William turns and stares up at Tom's face. Downstairs, Tom slams the belt down and grimaces. He looks across at Sammy, then grabs the belt. With a look of grim determination on his face, he marches outside his back door and flings the belt away. Smoke rises from the chimneys of the houses in the village as Tom carries a strip of corrugated iron up his garden, where two of the Fletcher brothers are digging the foundations for his Anderson shelter. There are other strips already near the digging. William watches from his bedroom window. Tom looks up and sees William, who once again ducks away. William sits at the top of the stairs.
Now, I thought you were supposed to be helping.
Your new shirt will get dirty.
Then take it off.
William just stares at Tom, whose face softens.
Go and change it, then.
In his sweater, William is outside with the Fletcher boys, helping them dig into the dark soil. The Fletcher boys wink and grin at each other.
Aren't you roasting in that jumper, William?
No.
He's got a temperature, hasn't he? Trying to sweat it out of himself, if you must know. Well, come on then, chop, chop. Want this finishing by tonight?
Tom has a tray with three lemonades on it. The boys resume work. Later indoors, Tom straightens his tie in front of a mirror in the kitchen, then goes out to the back, where William is sitting with Sammy in front of the fully erected Anderson shelter.
I'm going over to the church for a bit. Back in about an hour, all right?
All right.
William sits on the sandbags in front of the hut, which is earth over its arched roof. He pulls a sandbag into place. In the church.
Just a minute. I mean, have I been wasting my time these last months or what? It's uplifting people, what? Not burying. Now start again. Let's put a bit of beef into it this time.
Some sort of problem, is there, Mr. Oakley?
Nothing I can't sort out, if left to get on with it.
Right.
Tom at the organ watches the vicar go.
Now, this time I want to hear you, all right? So.
Walk up all England's mountains green.
Mrs. Fletcher waters a garden.
All England's pleasant pastures see.
David Hartridge, in his RAF uniform, kisses his wife and touches her swelling tummy as he marches away, a case in his hand. William struggles to lift a sandbag onto the roof of the Anderson shelter. He manages it and pats it down firmly. Continues his fight with the sandbags, lugging another towards the entrance of the corrugated iron hut. Exhausted, William lifts the last sandbag into place on the front row and rests his head on it. Tom raises a smile. Back home.
William! William!
Tom comes out to the back where the boy is seated where he left him with Sammy at his side.
Have you no more sense than to be out here this time of night? Do you want to catch your death?
You said we had to finish it tonight.
What?
William looks at the rest of the sandbags on the ground.
All right, come inside then. Come on.
William lowers his head and trudges down the garden as Tom shakes his head. Daytime, two army trucks drive through the village. They go past Tom's house. William watches the trucks go past from the window of the room with the harmonium. He sits down at the harmonium and turns the key in the lock. He pushes back the lid. Outside, Tom is sharpening an axe. He uses a sharpening wheel attached to a pedal. He stops and listens. Tom strides inside and lowers the harmonium lid. William leaps to his feet.
Don't you ever touch that instrument again without my permission. Is that clear?
William nods his head. Tom turns away. As he walks out of the room, Tom stops, then turns back to the startled boy.
Look. I'm going fishing this afternoon, if you want to come.
William stands with his hands clasped behind his back. Tom walks away. Outside, he's back at the sharpening wheel when Zack rides up on his bicycle.
Need any help?
You think I can just about manage, thanks.
Is Will about?
Will?
Running for William. Only I think Willie sounds silly, don't you? So, here's Willem.
We were just off out, actually.
Oh, going somewhere nice?
Fishing.
Really? Can I come?
Tom glowers. Later, he marches up the street with a posse of children carrying fishing rods behind him. Mrs. Fletcher's with another woman as he passes. Both women grin. He leads his troop of two girls and three boys across a wooden bridge. On the river bank, Tom and three of the children dangle their rods in the water, while a girl studies the contents of a jar, and a boy baits his hook. William looks across at Tom and smiles. Tom catches his gaze and returns the smile.
Zach, is your dad really an actor?
And my mum. Of course, Dad's an auxiliary fireman now.
They all look up at the low-flying aircraft.
Wow!
The single-engine plane rises in the air, then spins as it moves away from them.
Mrs. Hartridge's husband's a pilot.
I wish I was.
Annie Hartridge is outside when the plane flies overhead. She looks sadly up to the skies. William looks extremely solemn coming downstairs, carrying a wooden pencil case in both hands. Tom is packing sandwiches into a canvas bag.
Well, cheer up. It's only school you're going off to, you know. Not your own hanging. Got everything, have you?
William nods and hands Tom the pencil case.
Right. Off you go, then.
Tom lifts the bag strap over the boy's shoulder, pats him gently on the back of the head, and ushers him to the front door. At the end of the street, William turns back to see Tom and Sammy watching him go. Tom nods his head. Tom walks inside. Sammy hesitates, then follows him in. William watches the children cavort in the playground.
Will!
Zach beckons William in. William smiles and runs over to Zach and another boy. They chat animatedly. In class, the pupils sit silently as William stands in front of Mrs. Hartridge.
I'm sorry, William. It's the door just across the hall.
William hangs his head, walks to the back of the class to the desk beside Zach's, picks up his pencil case, and walks on towards the door which is at the back of the class. He shuts the door behind him. The rest of the children face the front. Tom is up a ladder outside a neighbour's house. She watches him work. He turns to see William walking back to the house, head bent. William looks across to Tom, then bursts into a run and races to the house. Tom comes home and removes his cap.
William!
Tom ducks as he enters the low doorway to find William at his bedroom window.
What's the matter?
They put me with the babies.
Tom walks William back to the school. The children are in the playground. Tom places a hand on William's shoulder and walks over to Mrs. Hartridge.
Can we have a word?
Of course, Mr. Oakley.
William tells me you've put him in the baby's class.
That's right, Mr. Oakley.
Well, would you mind telling me why, when you've got all his friends in your class?
Because they can read and write.
Tom's grim face softens.
Now, join up the dots and see what you end up with.
William presses his pencil onto the piece of paper on the table. The point breaks.
Never mind.
Tom takes the pencil to sharpen it.
Now, try again. Only this time, take your time. Don't try stabbing it to death.
Tom sharpens the pencil with a penknife.
Here you are. Have another go.
Tom hands the pencil back to William, who starts to connect a series of dots on the paper. Using one hand to hold the paper and with the pencil in his right hand, he starts to form the letter W.
It's bad, isn't it?
No, it isn't. Not bad at all. Now just get on with the next one. That's it.
Tom watches closely as the boy continues to join the dots. After the W, the letter I, until they end up with his name, William Beach, in block letters on the paper.
There you are, you see? You've written your own name.
Oh, Mr. Tom.
Now, draw a line under that and get it copied.
William draws a line under his name. Tom's face registers surprise as he sees the almost perfect straight line.
And before you do, just you draw me another line.
William draws a second straight line parallel to the first and as unwavering as it.
I'm straighter than I can do with a ruler. Wherever did you learn to do that?
Just did it.
The boy shrugs his shoulders.
Go on then, get it copied.
Won't I go to hell?
Hell?
Only you go to hell if you copy, don't you? It's cheating.
Well, whatever lunatic told you that?
William looks at him through sad eyes.
Never mind. Just do it. And if a chap with horns and a pitchfork comes looking for you, we'll blame me, all right?
William grins, nods, and starts to copy his name. He sits on the arm of Tom's chair as Tom reads a book.
The Tinderbox. A soldier was marching along the high road, right, left. Right, left.
Tom watches William sketch Sammy. It's a good pencil drawing.
Everybody used to mock him. And
William now mouths the words.
The eldest son wanted to go and cut wood.
The kingdom was certainly very small.
William graduates to joined up writing and signs his name. Tom watches over him and smiles. A grey morning, Tom is in the graveyard emptying out flowers and water from a vase. William rushes to his open bedroom window. He spies Tom at the graveside. William sprints away from the window. Tom places fresh flowers in the vase and moves away. Still in his pajamas, William comes into the churchyard and walks up to the grave Tom was tending. He kneels down and, tracing his forefinger along the gravestone, tries to read its inscription as Tom returns.
What's it say, Mr. Tom?
In loving memory of Rachel Oakley, aged 27 years, my dearly beloved wife. Also, John Oakley, aged 5 years, a dear son, now with God.
And did they just die?
No. They caught scarlatina.
What's scarlatina?
A disease. A killer. At least in them days. 2 weeks, it was all over. Or so I'm told.
Why didn't you catch it?
Because I wasn't here, was I? No. I was on a ship on convoy duty. Fighting for king and country, as they say. No way of getting home, of course. In fact, by the time I did, I was already in the ground.
William looks at the headstone.
What was he like, John?
He's bright as a button.
Sharp as sixpence. He's naughty sometimes, but full of life to the brim. In fact, very much like her, really.
Tom glances down at the pyjama-clad boy.
Anyway, what's this? Out here in your pyjamas, not even dressed yet.
I wanted to show you something.
Huh?
Come on.
William runs off.
Come on.
He leads Tom into his bedroom.
Well?
Dry, Mr. Tom. It's dry.
William bounces on the bed.
That's great, William. That's really great.
The postman hands a stack of mail to Tom.
Somebody's birthday, is it? Been steaming them open again, have you, Matthew? Any from London?
Never noticed any London postmarks.
You do surprise me.
Tom stands outside the post office come shop. In the window, a paint box and brush. Inside...
2 and 6?
This is quality stuff, Mr. Oakley.
I suppose it was only a matter of time once the war had started, before the profiteers started coming out the woodwork.
Thank you.
Tom hands over the half crown and turns, bumping into an old biddy. William heads through the churchyard. He sits on a gravestone and draws a picture of the stone angel on a plinth nearby. Raindrops spatter William's sketchpad. William looks up at the sky as the rain falls more heavily. He runs towards the church. Inside the empty church, William stops in the middle of the aisle and looks around at the windows and the various decorative statues. William spots the bronze eagle on the lectern and walks slowly towards it. He takes out his sketch pad and sits on a pew. Tom wanders through the graveyard with his hands in his pockets. He scans around. Tom finds William inside the church. He sees the boy sketching the eagle on the lectern. Tom tiptoes along the aisle towards William and stands behind him as he draws. Tom is struck by the detail of the face, beak and feathers.
So this is where you've been hiding yourself. You do realise your tea's been on the table for nearly half an hour, do you?
Sorry, Mr. Tom.
I should think you are.
William closes his exercise book and runs out of the church. He enters Tom's house.
Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, dear William. Happy birthday to you!
Zach, the doctor and his wife, the Thatcher sisters and George Fletcher are all around the table. Mrs. Fletcher brings a birthday cake.
Go on then, blow.
And if you manage to blow them all up, you get to make a wish. Only you can't tell anybody that wish, because otherwise...
Just blow the damn things out, will you?
He blows all 10 candles out and smiles broadly. Painted on green crepe paper, hanging like a banner, is Happy Birthday, William.
Happy very last bun. Thank you. What? Come on, anybody want
one? The children wear party hats.
So didn't she even send him a card, then?
Nothing.
Shame on her.
Mrs. Fletcher smiles at Tom.
Now, come on, let's have a tune out of you.
Come on, Alice. You know better than to ask that.
Look, Rachel wouldn't have thanked you, you know, for letting it rot away in the corner just because she's not here to play it anymore. You can't grieve forever, Tom.
Tom pinches his brow and stares solemnly at his neighbour. She returns his steadfast gaze. Tom glances round at the children, then walks into the front room and across to the harmonium. He sets a glass down on top of the instrument by the photograph, unlocks the lid, and raises it. He blows dust from the keys. Tom pulls out a couple of stops and uses the pedals to pump air into the bellows.
It's a long way to go. It's a long way to Tipperary, to the sweetest girl I know. Goodbye, Piccadilly. Farewell, Leicester Square. It's a long, long way to Tipperary, but my heart's right there.
As everyone applauds, Tom gazes at the woman in the photograph. The children run out of the house carrying balloons. William waves to them. Tom stands beside the boy on the doorstep and places his hand gently on William's shoulder. They go back inside.
Oh, and this is for you as well, by the way. Nearly forgot to give it to you. Happy birthday.
Thanks, Mr. Tom.
He hands William a package wrapped up in coloured paper and with a ribbon. William opens it. William picks up the flat paint box and looks at the remains of the birthday meal on the table.
This has been the best time I've had in my whole life.
William retches and runs from the table.
Obviously.
Children race out of the school as the bell goes. William is with his teacher. As she wipes the blackboard, he makes his way gingerly to the door of Mrs. Hartridge's class.
Come in.
He strides to the front, where she's behind her desk.
Mrs. Black said I were to see you before I went home.
That's right, William. I've got a bit of news for you.
William tears out of the school door and runs all the way back to Tom's.
Mr. Tom! I've been moved up to Mrs. Hartridge's class. She says I can read and write good enough now.
Mrs. Ford's with Tom, who holds a letter.
It's from your mum, William. Seems she's not been very well. Want you back.
A motorcyclist leads a convoy of army trucks with canvas tops into the village. Tom is with William and Sammy in a pony and trap. They see soldiers in one of the trucks, some with blood on their faces. A woman runs up and hands something into the back of a truck. More women hand or throw small parcels to the wounded soldiers in the trucks as the convoy continues through the village.
Where'd they come from, Mr. Tom?
A place called Dunkirk. Lucky to get out alive, I heard. Walk on!
The Littles and some of the village worthies, including Alice Fletcher, watch as Tom departs with William. Zack steps forward and waves a goodbye hand to William. Tom stands on the railway platform with the boy as a train draws into the station.
Now, don't forget to write. And if you do change your mind about them paintings of yours, you just let me know and I'll post them to you, all right?
They belong here with you. And anyway, they'll still be here when I get back, won't they?
Of course they will.
I will be coming back, won't I?
A hesitant Tom smiles.
Of course you will. Now you just take good care of yourself, you hear?
Just take your time. You haven't seen your mother for a few months, so it's going to be a bit awkward at first.
Tom hands William his things and shuts the door. The boy leans on the open window.
I'll miss you.
Their faces are level. Tom looks at the boy and nods. He taps the boy's hand, leaning on the window frame.
You'll make sure he gets off all right.
Don't worry.
The guard walks down the platform. William leans out of the window. As the train pulls out of Weirwold, William waves as he glimpses back at Tom, who returns his wave. Sammy is sitting beside Tom. The train goes under a bridge and round a bend, taking the waving boy out of Tom's view. The train arrives in London. People wait on the platform as the doors open and passengers stream out. William is fast asleep in his carriage. The guard wakes him.
Here you are then, son. Rise and shine!
William slowly comes to and climbs down from the train onto the busy platform. He looks up and down it. He sees his mother in the distance and waves. She doesn't respond. He runs up and stands in front of her.
Willie?
She reaches out her gloved hand towards his face but doesn't touch it.
You look different.
Put weight on. See, I'll take that for you.
I'll say what to take and not to take.
She smacks his hand away, takes her straw bag and stomps off. He chases after her.
So, how are you feeling now?
Fine. I'm fine.
Only they said you was ill.
Did they? So, what you got in the bag then?
Just me things, and a present for you from Mr. Tom.
Mr. Tom?
Mr. Oakley, the man I stays with down there.
Well, I don't need charity, thank you.
It's just some bed socks, and Mrs. Little, that's the doctor's wife, she sent you a bottle of tonic wine.
Wine? Haven't I told you about the evils of drink?
It ain't a real drink, Mum, like you get in a pub. It's got iron in it to help you get your strength back.
And what would you know about what you get in a pub?
They both stride off along the platform. It's dark when they climb off a number 53 bus. Mrs. Beach has a torch.
When we get home, I want no noise from you, all right?
Why?
Because nobody has to know that you're here, that's why. And when we get inside, I've got a surprise for you.
They go down an outside stairway to a basement flat. Mrs. Beach closes the front door and switches on the light. She's an austere woman with a grim, pale face. Her hair is pulled back and she wears a grey hat and coat. William meanders down the hallway.
What's that smell?
What smell?
Doesn't matter.
He sets down the satchel he's been carrying.
No dog is it, this surprise.
What surprise?
This surprise you got for me.
It's over there, in the box.
William walks across the living room, followed by his mother. There's a big cardboard box on a trellis in the middle of the room. William looks inside the box and sees a baby.
It's a baby.
It's a present from Jesus.
William goes to pick it up.
Don't you dare! Bit of discipline, that's all she needs.
She's just a baby, ma'am.
Sit down. Now!
William runs to the table, pulls out a chair, and sits.
Oh, God, but isn't my life bad enough as it is? Stuck here on my own in this house, night after night, frightened off out me head half the time, without you starting.
What are you frightened of, Mum? The air raids, is it?
The air raids. Look, if we're killed, we're killed. And that's God's will, right?
So, what are you frightened of, then?
Of what's going on out there, of course. Oh, Willie, if you knew. If you only knew what's going on out there. The filth. The rising tide of filth.
Perhaps you see somebody, Mum.
Like who? Like an head doctor, perhaps. That's what you think, is it? That perhaps I'm off my head. Just because I know what's going on out there. You just keep a civil tongue in your head, my lad. Or else.
She bends over him, then straightens up.
You have brought it back, haven't you? The belt.
I forgot.
Liar. Liar!
He falls from the chair.
You left it behind on purpose, didn't you? Didn't you?
No, Mum, honest.
But I can get another, you know. Oh, yeah, I know a shop where they sell lots of them. Now get upstairs, out of my sight.
William runs upstairs and into his room.
Then you can shut up and all.
William lies on his bed with his hands clasped tightly over his ears. In Weirwold, Tom enters William's room. He stands for a while staring at the wooden-framed bed. The thick, comfy quilt and plumped-up pillows are tidily made up on it. He turns and leaves. In London, William is making his bed in his dimly lit room. He pulls up a meagre grey blanket over the pillow and turns on hearing a noise. William approaches the window and pulls back the net curtain to peer into the backyard. It's full of old junk, a rickety old pram and an overturned rubbish bin. He opens his bedroom door and tentatively creeps down the darkened stairwell, holding lightly onto the banister as he goes. His face is filled with apprehension. He finds his mother in the kitchen by a cooker. He sees his baby sister writhing in her cardboard box cot. He spots his stuff on a sideboard.
Your favourite.
William beams as his mum holds out a boiled egg and soldiers.
Certainly got your appetite back anyway. Must be all that fresh air, I expect. Oh, such a beautiful baby you were, though. Proud as punch I was. Wheeling you out in your pram, sun shining, people stopping. Just stopping, just to look at you. Where'd you get him from then, missus? Evan? Happiest days of my entire life then, Willie.
She smiles as William sops up yellow runny egg from his plate with a toasted bread soldier. She keeps looking at him as she sips from a teacup and places it back on a saucer.
Finished?
William nods eagerly and licks his fingers. He picks up a folder bound with string from the sideboard.
Mum?
What's this?
My present to you. It was Mr. Tom's idea.
Mr. Tom?
I told you, the man I stay with down there. Well, go on, open it.
She unties the string and, laying the folder on the table, opens it to find a colourful painting of Tom's stone-walled house.
I swear I live down there.
Did you steal this?
I did it myself.
Liar.
I did, Mum. Honest I did.
And these? Where did these come from then, eh? Did you steal these as well?
They were presents from Ginny and Carrie.
Girls? You've been mixing with girls down there.
But they're nice, Mum, and they all go to church. Well, except Zach, of course.
Zach?
He's my best friend.
And why doesn't he go to church then?
Because they ain't got one down there. A synagogue, I mean.
A synagogue?
That's what they call their church. The synagogue.
He's Jewish. You're telling me that you've been consorting with Jews down there?
But what's wrong with Jews, Mum? Like Zach says, Jesus was a Jew, wasn't he?
Blasphemer. Blasphemer! You know what we do with blasphemers in this house!
No, Mum! Please! Not there! Please, Mum! Not there!
She shoves William into a dark, tiny cupboard underneath the stairs and closes the door. Daytime. Tom pins up one of William's paintings in the hallway. There are more paintings on the walls nearby. One shows Sammy the collie, another depicts the fishing trip, then there's a painting of William's birthday party. Tom plays a harmonium and later listens to the radio.
containers are leaving blazing and destroyed buildings. Overhead, I can hear the pulsing drone of the circling bomber. Below ground in the shelters, men, women and children listen to the muffled sounds of bombs and anti-aircraft fire.
Mr. Oakley?
Sack approaches.
Still no news then?
Afraid not.
Sack looks crestfallen as Tom's head droops. Tom exits his front door as the postman walks past.
Sorry, Tom. Still nothing from London, I'm afraid. What's it been, weeks now, eh?
Tom nods sadly.
Bit of bad news for Mrs. Hartridge up at the school. That young husband of hers, one of Fly Spitz. Missing. Believed dead.
Tom sits with Mrs. Ford.
Contact him, Mr. Oakley.
Only I thought I'd have heard from him by now, you see. It's been over a month.
It does tend to happen like that, you know, once they get back into the home environment. And after all, only natural for a boy of that age, I suppose, to prefer to be with his own.
Back in his garden, Tom digs up potatoes from the vegetable patch. As he turns over the rich, dark soil with a pitchfork, he finds something. It's the belt William's mother used for whipping the boy and which Tom threw away. He lifts it up and stares at it. Tom hastily buries it in the soil again, stamping over the rich brown earth with his willy boot. A steam train pulls into a station at night. Lots of soldiers and sailors in uniform disembark onto the platform. Tom, wearing a coat, scarf and soft cap, steps off the train with Sammy. A red Routemaster 53 double-decker bus travels along a darkened London street. It stops at a corner, and Tom and Sammy get out. Tom shines a torch on a piece of paper he's carrying. An ARP warden approaches.
Lost, are we, sir?
Looks like it.
Never mind about that now. Let's get down the shelter. Come on.
Tom follows the warden, who's wearing a boiler suit and a tin helmet, across the street. Lots of people rush into the bomb shelter, the entrance of which is lined with sandbags.
Come on, there we are.
They both shuffle along the street. The warden glances down at Sammy at the shelter's entrance.
Oh, sorry, mate. No dogs allowed in the shelter.
So what am I supposed to do with him, eh? Lead him out here to be blown to bits?
Oh, come on, then.
Tom and Sammy head inside. Later, the warden, a man in his late 50s, brings Tom a cuppa as other people set up beds for the night.
Well, he definitely didn't run away, you say. Only it's happening all the time. Kids just taking off, coming back to London.
No question of that. Look, I just want to make sure he's all right, that's all.
And you've got an address for him round here, have you?
Tom takes a crumpled piece of paper from his inside coat pocket and shows it to the warden.
Well, come tomorrow morning, God willing. We'll see if we can find him for you, shall we?
People stare as dust falls from the ceiling. Next morning, men, women and children exit the air raid shelter in a state of shock. Tom and Sammy step out. Tom stares across the street at a stretcher being loaded into an ambulance. As the ambulance pulls off, the extent of the night's bombing is evident. As firemen fight fires and wardens sift through the rubble of destroyed houses. With a grimace, Tom crosses the street to the ARP warden from the shelter.
Young couple, just married. He was home on embarkation leave.
And are they both?
Oh, yeah. Well, I suppose you'll be wanting to find this kid of yours, right?
If it's not...
Just give me 10 minutes, will you?
Of course.
As the warden heads off, Tom spots an old framed black and white wedding photograph amongst the rubble. Behind the smashed glass, a bride and groom pose with their families. The warden leads Tom and Sammy along a street lined with tall terraced houses. Tom climbs down the steps to the basement flat, number 17A. A neighbour.
If it's Mrs. Beach you're wanting, she's not here.
Well, do you know where she's gone?
Gone to the coast, she said.
And what about the boy? Did he go with her?
Can't remember ever seeing any boy.
Little lad. 10 years old.
Oh, young Willie, you mean. Evacuated to the country last I heard. Probably just as well. Quiet boy. No friends as such. Bullied a lot. Sitting target, really. I mean, this house. Real house of mystery, you know. You don't know, I hear some funny things sometimes.
What sort of things?
Well, whimpers sometimes. Bumps.
Bumps?
Like somebody humping furniture about.
Well, people do move furniture about.
At 3 o'clock in the morning.
So when did you last see her?
About a week ago. In fact, I nearly dropped dead with shock when she condescended to speak to me. Talk about la-di-da.
There's nobody in there, Rover.
Sammy sniffs around the door.
Not like him to make a fuss over nothing, though.
Smell something, do you?
Tom descends the steps once more and tries to open the door.
Look, I'll see if I can find a copper. Oi, hang on a minute.
Tom pushes on the door with his shoulder and manages to break in.
God, what died in here then?
Tom trudges through the filthy house to where Sammy is scraping at the cupboard door under the stairs.
Quiet, Sam.
Tom tries to open the door, but it's tied with string.
Here, let me.
The warden takes out a pocket knife and cuts the string. He lifts the latch, opens the door, and grimaces at the smell. He shines a torch inside.
God almighty. What the hell's been going on here?
William sits on the floor, tied to the wall, and holds his baby sister close. He looks tired, filthy, and extremely thin. He coughs and splutters. Neighbours stand by the railings as an ambulance pulls up, and an ambulance woman heads down to number 17A. William sits in an armchair, holding his baby sister in his arms. Tom and a policeman are next to him.
All right. Let me have the baby, son.
Get away!
Let me.
Scruffy-haired William glances up at Tom with saddened eyes.
What's his name then, William?
It's an her. I call her Trudy.
Trudy? That's a nice name. You gonna let me have a hold then?
Tom stares intently at the boy and gives him a reassuring nod. William glances down at his baby sister, then back to Tom. Tom holds out his hands. William hands Tom the baby. He in turn hands it to the policeman, who brings her to the ambulance woman. She checks Trudy's pulse. Tom and William hug tightly.
Why didn't you come? I kept calling for you, but you didn't come.
Having found no pulse, the ambulance woman shakes her head. Tom and William cling on tightly to each other. An ambulance barrels along a London street. Tom's in a hospital ward where a doctor and nurse are examining William.
Thank you.
Are you related to this child?
No.
Then who are you?
The one who found him.
And just in time, I'd say.
Well, Dr. Redford reported casualty immediately.
All right. Take him down to Children's and see that he gets a tetanus. And what the hell is that dog doing in here?
I'm sorry, you really will have to get that animal out of here, you know.
It won't be far away. Don't you worry.
William manages a faint smile as the nurse wheels him off. Outside, the ARP warden approaches Tom.
Tom? How is he?
Tom shakes his head.
Any news about the mother?
No. We'll be prison for her, I reckon, when I do catch up with her.
And is there a husband?
There was once, apparently. Found dead in an alley years ago, choked on his own vomit. Seems his idea of family life was drinking himself silly, then coming home and using her as a punch bag. The kid as well, I shouldn't wonder. So, you'll be going back to the country now, will you?
Not without William, or you won't.
The warden smiles as Tom trundles across the street with Sammy on his lead. At night, the hospital's grand facade is illuminated with a soft yellow light. Inside, William wakes abruptly and sits up in bed. The other children in the ward wake as a nurse approaches William with a loaded syringe. Morning. Tom ties Sammy to a post beside a Salvation Army refreshments van.
Keep an eye on him, will you? Thanks.
The Salvation Army lady watches Sammy as Tom walks over to the hospital. Inside, Tom's with a nurse.
He's in deep shock, Mr. Oakley. We've had to keep him well sedated, I'm afraid.
The nurse escorts him into William's ward. Bright sunlight shines through tall windows as Tom approaches William's bed. William lies asleep, his newly shaven head leaning to one side. Later, he sits up in bed.
Well, saves combing, I suppose. How are you feeling now?
I had a nightmare. They stuck this needle in me. Can't I come in with you, Mr. Tom?
I'm afraid you have to leave now.
Don't go. Stay a bit more.
Now, you just concentrate on getting yourself better, all right?
A moustached man in a tan suit stands nearby.
Not something I have a lot of faith in myself, mind you. Drugging them. You'll be Mr. Tom, then.
Tom Oakley.
My name's Stelton. I'm a psychiatrist. I work in conjunction with a children's home. Our feeling is that he'd benefit from treatment there.
What sort of treatment?
Psychiatric treatment.
I'd like him to come back home with me.
As I understand it, you aren't actually related to him, Mr. Oakley.
So, are there any other relatives who'd take him in?
Well, that's, of course, something that we would have to go into.
And if there aren't?
As I said, there is the children's home.
Tom and Sammy walk down the street where William's mother lived. They descend the steps to the basement flat. Tom glances furtively over his shoulder to check the coast is clear, then forces the door open with a push of his shoulder. He enters William's bedroom and looks around. He begins to gather William's clothes, which have been left scattered around the room. Trousers, a balaclava, a coat, and William's pyjamas. Night. Tom ties Sammy to the post outside the hospital. Tom carries a brown paper bag as he heads inside. He peers through a doorway into a corridor. He pushes open the swing door and creeps in quietly. Tom spots a wheelchair nearby and, placing the brown paper bag on it, begins to wheel it down the corridor. A nurse steps out of a doorway and walks out through the doors, unaware of the night visitor. Tom looks around on hearing the doors close behind him. He glances into a ward where a nurse searches through files in a cabinet. He enters William's ward, which is opposite. Tom's tall shadow moves over the room full of children lying sleeping in their beds. He goes to William, who's also asleep, and sits him up in bed. Tom carries William over his shoulder and unties Sammy outside. Lush green countryside. Tom travels on horse and cart over a river. William, who's been leaning on his arm asleep, wakes and looks up at the kind-faced Tom.
Mr. Tom? How did I get here?
Oh, he kidnapped you. Oh. That's what I did, boy. I kidnapped you. Oh. I kidnapped you. I kidnapped you!
The doctor examines William and Tom's house.
I seem to have patched you up pretty well at the hospital, William. Now, you just settle down and I'll call in to see you again tomorrow, all right?
William falls asleep as Tom and the doctor head downstairs.
The sores will soon heal, of course. It's the wounds inside you need to worry about.
Right.
And you do realise, don't you, Tom, that sooner or later they're bound to come looking for him.
Nah, they're far too busy to go chasing evacuees. Besides, they didn't even know he was in London. She saw to that.
Good night, then, Tom.
Good night, Doctor. Oh, and you will let young Zack know he's back.
You mean he hasn't been around here yet?
William has a nightmare.
Hey!
Come on now, come on.
It's him, Mr. Tom! It's him!
A man with a syringe. Zack pedals his red bicycle around outside Tom's house. In William's bedroom, Tom removes the blackout curtains from the window. William sits up, startled, as bright sunlight spills in.
How are you feeling?
I want to come down.
All right.
An eager William, wearing his striped pyjamas, pushes down the sheets and blankets of his comfy bed. Sammy watches as William swings his legs over the edge and tries to stand. He keels over and lands on the floor.
Oh, dear. That's all right, all right. Get back in. There we are. Don't worry. Don't worry. They'll get stronger.
Tom tucks him back into bed. Zack enters the kitchen as Tom fries eggs.
Don't you ever knock?
Sorry. So, it was him today, Mr. Oakley.
Well, he's had his breakfast, you can't.
But he takes ages. You know what he's like. He chews everything.
We thought we all did.
Not everybody. I just give him a quick bite to swallow it.
Mr. Tom?
Yes?
Is that Zack down there?
Go on, then. Take that out.
Thanks, Mr. Oakley.
Zack carries the breakfast tray upstairs to William's room.
So what's been happening while I've been away?
Not a lot. Been dead boring, really. Oh, except Mrs. Hartridge's husband got shot down and killed. Lisa never found him, but she still had the baby, okay?
Baby?
You did know she was having a baby?
No.
But you must have noticed how big she'd got. You do know about sex and stuff, don't you?
Only it's something dirty and you go to well for it.
That's rubbish, Will.
My dad says sex is just a man and a woman's way of showing how much they love each other. We wouldn't be here if it wasn't for sex, any of us.
But can't a lady have a baby on her own?
Of course not. There has to be a man involved.
Tom walks in.
Right, Zack. Home time for you, I think. You don't want William overdoing it.
But I can't come and see him tomorrow, Mr. Oakley.
Of course you can.
In that case, I'll see you tomorrow then, Will.
William gives Zack a wave as he goes. Tom sits on the edge of the bed.
So, what's all that about then?
Zack says a lady can't have a baby without a man.
Oh, yeah?
Is that right?
Yeah.
True. Trudy's dead, isn't she?
I think you knew that already, didn't you?
And I killed her.
You killed her?
I should have got out. I did try. Honest, I did.
Well, of course you did. Only you were tied up. Right? Only what you have to remember is that the way she treated you and the baby was because your mum was sick, William. In fact, very sick, I'd say, to do what you did. The trouble was, with this war on, people so busy surviving themselves to even notice, so there was no one to help. Now, you tell me something, William. This nightmare you keep having, it's always the same one, right? And it's always the same man. Who is he, this man?
Just this man.
And what does this man do in your dream?
Just keep saying I have to go with him.
William, wearing his woolly balaclava hat, strolls outside. He opens a gate and walks up to a blue front door belonging to a quaint cottage. As he waits at the door, Tom appears from the back garden.
Hello! What are you doing here?
Come to see Mrs. Hartridge.
She's round the back.
William takes off his balaclava as he walks to the back, revealing his messy hair that's growing back in clumps. He finds Mrs. Hartridge sitting on a chair in the garden with a beautiful baby lying on a blanket at her feet.
Hello, William. Now, this is my Peggy, who looks just like her dad, they reckon. So, how are you feeling now?
I'm all right.
Oh, well. At least you're back safe and sound anyway, eh? So, how about a glass of lemonade, then?
Yeah, please.
Then you just hold on to my Peggy for me, will you, while I get it?
William stands staring through narrowed eyes and crumpled forehead. He twitches nervously as Tom and Mrs. Hartridge wait. William steps forward and approaches the new mother. He sits on the chair. Mrs. Hartridge gently places the baby in William's arms and walks over to Tom, who wears a satisfied grin. They watch as William kisses the baby's forehead and cradles her gently in his arms. Inside, Mrs. Hartridge stares fondly at a photo of her husband in uniform as she pours a glass of lemonade. Zack and William spot a billboard poster, East End Blitzed, Many Dead.
That's where my dad's based, in the East End.
He'll be all right.
Of course he will.
William, looking like he's completely recovered now, walks back to Tom's house. He walks through the door and up to Tom, who waits with a worried expression on his face. William turns to see a policeman, the smartly dressed Mrs. Ford, Dr. Stelton, the psychiatrist from the hospital, and a grim-faced, suited official waiting in Tom's sitting room. They all stare intently at William.
I'm afraid we have some bad news for you, William. It's about your mother.
She don't want me back again, does she?
She's dead, William.
Dead?
I'm afraid she drowned herself, son.
Now, Dr. Stelton's here from a children's home in Sussex. Lovely place, from what I'm told. Right out in the country.
I'm sure you're going to like it there, William.
I want to stay here with Mr. Tom. Tell them, Mr. Tom, I want to stay here with you.
Now then, that's enough of that, my lad. Yeah, Mr. Oakley is in trouble enough as it is. It's a serious offence, this kidnapper.
I weren't kidnapped. I were rescued.
Why doesn't William wait upstairs?
The grim-faced man in a black tie and stiff collared shirt gets to his feet.
Go on, then. Up you go.
William treads warily past Dr. Stelton on his way to the stairs. Tom strides past Stelton and stands at the bottom of the stairs.
William!
He walks up to the boy.
The man in your dream. Is that him? The one with the moustache? No way that we can predict which way they are. Right.
William nods and goes to his room. His face solemn, Tom walks back downstairs past a painting of Sammy and faces Stelton.
This, children's home you're on about taking him to?
Oh, yes.
You're in charge there, are you?
That's right.
Only, he's been having these nightmares, you see, ever since I got him back here.
It's hardly surprising, Mr. Oakley, after all he's
been through. About you, apparently.
Me, Mr. Oakley.
But you're going to come and take him away again. In fact, he wakes up regularly, screaming about it.
All of which bears out what I've just been saying, I think. What the lad needs is specialist medical treatment.
What the lad needs is love, Dr. Stelton. Something he hadn't seen a lot of, apparently, before he came to me. Now, are you people really trying to tell me that he's going to get more of that where you're on about taking him to than he is here? Because if you are, I'm telling you, you're talking a right load of rubbish.
Mr. Oakley, Dr. Stelton is one of the very best people in his field. And you can take it from me that along with the rest of us, his one and only concern here is for the boy's own welfare. Let's get a spot of fresh air. Shall we, Mr. Oakley?
The severe-looking man walks out with Tom, leaving Stelton with Mrs. Ford and the constable.
But then it isn't the boy's welfare this is all about, really, is it, Mr. Oakley?
Isn't it?
No, it's about you, I'd say. Your welfare.
Me?
A lonely, and from what I hear, embittered old man, facing a lonely and bitter old age.
You really think that's the only reason I want him back? Just to be company for me when I'm past it?
Well, isn't it, basically?
No! It bloody well isn't, and I resent the implication.
William watches from his bedroom window.
Doesn't it bother you at all that when you're 70, he's still going to be in his teens?
Of course it bothers me. I'm not stupid, you know. There's not a lot we can do about that, is there? Look, I know it's not an ideal situation, anything but... I'll put it this way. It's got to be a damn sight more ideal than your Dr. Stelton in there turning him into some sort of human guinea pig.
Just tell me one thing, Mr. Oakley. Why is the boy suddenly so important to you? He's an evacuee, for God's sake. And one at that, as I understand it, you took violent exception to having foisted on you in the first place.
Isn't it obvious?
Not to me, no. Nor to Dr. Stelton.
Because I love him, of course. As if he was my own flesh and blood, I do. And for what it's worth, I think he loves me as well.
And is that really enough, do you think, in this day and age?
Well, I suppose it has to be, hasn't it, Mr. Greenway? In this day and age or any other. Because if it isn't, what else is there, eh?
Mr. Tom, I won't go with them.
Oh, won't
you? No, I won't.
Just as well then, isn't it? Because nobody's asking you to.
William's brow creases.
What?
Come here.
William joins Tom at the window.
You see that one in the dark suit?
Yeah.
Well, he's from something called the Home Office. And he reckons that after all the trouble you've caused, he don't want you back anymore, thanks. So, as long as I adopt you, all legal and proper-like, looks like I'm stuck with you, doesn't it?
Oh, Mr. Tom!
The boy flings his arms around Tom's waist. William runs to Dr. Little's.
Mrs. Little, can I see Zach? Only I've got some really great news to tell him.
Of course you can, William.
Mrs. Little leads him inside.
He's upstairs, packing.
Packing?
Yes. You see, he's just had some news himself. Not very good news in his case, I'm afraid.
Upstairs, Zach is packing a suitcase. His normally smiling features are morose.
I got a phone call from my mum. They bombed the docks. My dad was there. I'm sure he'll be all right, of course. Take more than a German bomb to stop him. Only, I have to go and see him. Just in case he's...
William looks around helplessly as Zach stares at him sadly. Tom is with William in the Anderson shelter.
Are they going to bomb us, Mr. Tom?
Saving them for London, I expect.
William's eyes rove anxiously as he looks up at the roof of the shelter. Daytime in Tom's kitchen.
This is the BBC Home Service. Here is the news. Last night's mass air raid on London is estimated to have been the heaviest of the war so far. At least 400 people have been killed and 1,400 seriously injured. Fires are still burning all over the city, and many homes in the East End have been razed to the ground. The fire and the rescue...
Tom switches off the radio. William looks down at the table. Tom is making William's bed. Tom sees William's sketchpad on the bedside table. He picks it up and flicks it open to a painting of a burning London. A van with dead only is on a street. Sprinting along the street is a boy in a striped sweater like Zach's. Tom shows it to Alice Fletcher.
Still no word from Zach, then?
Afraid not.
That poor child.
Dressed in a sweater and his balaclava, William stands alone on the Weirwold station platform as a train draws in. He watches as it stops and doors open.
Stop pushing.
Hello.
A family gets off the train, and William shuffles along the platform after them. Arriving home, he pulls off his balaclava and sees the Littles are with Tom. Mrs. Little has a letter in her hand.
Oh, William.
Mrs. Little steps towards him.
William.
William faints. Tom catches him before he falls. Mrs. Hartridge ushers the last of the children into school. William stands outside the railings. In class, the teacher looks at the two empty desks.
Has anybody any idea where William is today?
No, Mrs. Hartridge.
She looks out of the window and sees him still clutching onto the railings. She runs out.
William?
He's disappeared by the time she's outside. On a country track, he turns to see Zach on his bike. Zach pedals into a ford, then raises his legs up as the water splashes him.
Yeah!
William's smile fades as he realizes Zach isn't there at all. He runs into the church.
I hate you, God! I hate you! I hate you! I really hate you!
Tom's at his workshop when Mrs. Hartridge strides up.
Is William all right, Mr. Oakley?
Well, he's still very upset, of course, but... Why?
Only that he didn't turn up at school today. Or rather, he did. Then...
The clock on Tom's mantelpiece indicates 6:20. Tom tosses away his paper. William comes in, head down.
Where have you been?
He shrugs his shoulders.
You all right?
Yeah.
Up you go and wash, then.
Tea'll be on the table in 5 minutes.
I'm not hungry.
William ambles up the stairs. day, Tom strides across to Dr. Little's. The doctor opens the door.
Can we have a word, Doctor?
Of course, Tom. Come in.
Tom removes his soft cap and steps inside. He sees Zack's red bicycle in the hall. Tom is outside his workshop when William walks slowly towards him. William stops when he spots Zack's bicycle leaning against a wall.
Dr. Little sent me round for you. Thought you might like to learn to ride it. Sure Zack would have wanted you to have it.
William's face crumples and he runs to the house. Tom strides in and finds William sitting at the bottom of the stairs.
Now, you just come with me for a minute. Come on!
William's lips are tightly shut. He watches Tom leave, then joins Tom in the graveyard.
You think you're the only person who ever lost anybody? It's happening to people all over. This very minute. And all because some maniac wants to rule the world. And how do you think I felt, eh, when it happened to me? Not just my wife I lost, you know. She was my best pal as well. My very best. And my lad. And me not even here. Except I didn't lose them, you see. Not really. Because they're still here. Inside here.
His head.
And always will be. Just like Zack will be for you. In every little thing you'll ever remember about him. And that is something that nobody can ever take away from you. Nobody. Ever.
William fights back tears, then leans his head on Tom's chest. Standing in front of Rachel's grave, Tom rests his chin on the boy's head. William slips his arm round Tom's waist. William walks towards the red bicycle, a look of determination on his face. William grabs the handlebars and wheels the bike to the street. Tom watches from behind a net curtain. William mounts the bike but can't keep his balance. Tom closes his eyes, wrinkles his brow and winces. William picks the bike up, places his leg over the crossbar and tries again. He lasts a little longer, then falls off again. He gets to his feet, brushes his knees, then climbs back onto the bike. Tom grins and wipes his right eye. William's feet reach the pedals this time and he wobbles round in a circle. Tom smiles. Annie Hartridge rushes out of a cottage clutching a telegram.
William! William!
He cycles up.
What's wrong, Mrs. Hartridge? Nothing's wrong, William. He's just... Well, I had to tell somebody. See, I've just had this telegram about my David. And he isn't dead after all. He's alive. A prisoner of war. Isn't that wonderful, William? Isn't that absolutely wonderful?
Yes, Mrs. Hartridge. Really wonderful.
Hearing the baby, they both look to the cottage and Annie rushes back inside. William's on a road outside the village. It's on a hill and he pushes the bicycle up it. When he reaches a bend in the road, William stops and turns the bicycle round to face downhill. He mounts the bicycle, stares at the road ahead of him, and sets off, freewheeling. He continues at speed towards the village. Hearing him, Tom sets down his tools and steps onto the road. He stops in front of Tom.
I can ride, Dad! I can really ride!
Tom is taken aback.
Right.
He grins, then ruffles William's reddish-brown hair with his hand. The boy smiles broadly as he looks up into the face of Mr. Tom. William's painting of Tom's house. ITFC audio description by Fiona McGowan and James O'Hara.